Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're going back in the time machine to September of 1994. I've been joined by Stuart Brooks. Stuart, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Yes, very well, thank you.
Stuart, just in about 15 seconds, plug your New Generation podcast and then we'll do it a bit more at the end of the show.
I host the New Generation Project podcast alongside Adam Wykes and Paul Scrivens. And we're watching from around this time as well. So if you're a fan of this show, then it may well appeal to you as well.
Where can people find that?
Facebook.com/New Generation Project Podcast and Twitter.com/New Gen Podcast.
Excellent. We will plug that more fully at the end of the show, but we will jump into the news.
Ric Flair is to retire in the headline match of Halloween Havoc next month after being asked by management to put his career on the line and lose to Hulk Hogan in order to boost the buy rate of the pay-per-view. At the current time on WCW television, the main event of October's pay-per-view calls for Flair to face Hogan for the WCW title inside a steel cage with just Hogan's career on the line. Hogan used that stipulation to convince Flair to get back in the ring, him having been swanning it up in Las Vegas, with Hogan's world title since being suspended last month. But at the latest set of TV tapings that will air in 2 weeks' time, Flair lost a stipulation tag match that meant he too would have to put his career on the line. It's said that Flair agreed reluctantly to the decision. He is currently 45 years old and was said to have been planning a retirement at the earliest, sometime at the end of 1995. Flair has also been said to be telling anyone who will listen that when he retires, he won't be returning to the ring again, not wanting to be someone who teases retirement only to tarnish his reputation.
The babyface team of Dustin and Dusty Rhodes and the Nasty Boys defeated the Stud Stable in the War Games match at Full Brawl, a show that featured Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan in a pre-recorded dueling promo segment. Flair, filmed at a bar in Las Vegas, and Hogan, filmed at a gym in Florida, cut a promo on the phone to each other where Hogan agreed to put his career on the line at Halloween Havoc in return for a match with Flair. The show featured a moment that perhaps riled a lot of WCW fans as Steve Austin was defeated by Hacksaw Jim Duggan for the United States title in a surprise match that lasted just 35 seconds. Duggan was subbing in for the injured Ricky Steamboat, who had forfeited his title. The highlight of the show was a triangle match between Vader, the Guardian Angel and Sting. Vader pinned Angel in 7 minutes, but Vader and Sting went on to have the best match of the evening in a match that entered sudden death, with Vader winning thanks to interference from the masked man that interfered at the Clash of the Champions.
Early plans for WWF Survivor Series in November seem to be indicating a double main event of The Undertaker versus Yokozuna in a rematch from the Royal Rumble, and seemingly Bret Hart versus former WWF champion Bob Backlund. Backlund featured heavily on WWF television this month, saying that he believes he defeated Bret Hart in their match back in July on WWF Superstars. Backlund then challenged Lou from the WWF magazine to try and escape his chicken wing submission manoeuvre in a very strong visual segment. Backlund refused to release the hold, forcing McMahon, Savage and a swarm of WWF officials to storm the ring to break it up.
A big month of departures in WCW this month, which saw announcer Jesse Ventura, Terry Funk, Cactus Jack and Lord Steven Regal all leave or appear to leave the company. Cactus Jack departed the company after losing a Loser Leaves Town match with Kevin Sullivan at Full Brawl. Terry Funk, it is said, sent a fax to the company this week saying that he couldn't continue to work on the current Murray deal, which, given that he also missed TV tapings this week, is believed to be a sign of him quitting. Lord Steven Regal lost the TV title to Johnny Bad at Full Brawl and is said to be off to New Japan, nixing a feud between him and Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
But the biggest departure is Ventura, who has apparently been released 5 months early from the end of his contract. Since the arrival of Bobby Heenan, Ventura has been used far less frequently on WCW television. It was initially believed that Heenan would form part of a three-man commentary booth with Ventura and Schiavone, but it's predominantly just been Heenan and Schiavone on pay-per-view and television. In the last set of WCW Worldwide TV tapings, Ventura's last regular role, he was replaced by Heenan there too. Issues pending his release seem to stem from him not flying into Atlanta on 7 days' notice for some voiceover work, which he is contracted to do, but a situation complicated by Ventura needing 7 days to find a replacement for his radio show. Ventura wasn't flown in for either of the Clash of the Champions event in Cedar Rapids or for Fall Brawl. It is said he will receive his full salary through until the end of his deal.
Ric Flair!
Hey,
I've been waiting.
What is it, man?
What is this? Are you kidding me?
The World Championship belt. What do you think, man? I'm in Las Vegas.
That is not that is.
I'll check you later, pal.
Hold on. Just what? you don't walk away from me, Ric Flair.
Gee, I got things to do here tonight, man. I'm with Steve Wheeler at the Mirage. We're partying. What do you want?
Well, just a second.
Hey, come on. What's going on here? What is it?
I've got some serious questions to ask. You're suspended right now. Hulk Hogan is injured. And you've upset the entire world of professional wrestling.
What I've done is I've left the sport. The undefeated world heavyweight champion. And there's about 10,000 women in the town.
Let me see
that belt. Oh, look at it, pal. Read it. The real world heavyweight champion. What I'm doing right now, my friend, is taking this world championship, this prestige, this notoriety to a new level. This is the real deal. What do you want with me?
Well, I'll tell you what I want with you.
Hey,
Hulk Hogan.
You and I, brother, we crossed hairs. You went with Hogan. I went to Las Vegas.
Yeah, but take a look what you did to Hulk Hogan at the Clash of the Champions. You and whoever else you were affiliated with absolutely took this guy, well, virtually out of the business.
Yeah, well, you know what? He deserved to be out of the business long, long ago. He made a grave mistake, a major error, when he left the WWF. And all this magnificence, he comes to WCW, you really think he will run roughshod on the Nature Boy? You think he'll walk into Las Vegas, into the Mirage? Look at this place. It's on fire. This is my kind of action. I am retired.
And I know there are a half a dozen ladies in here waiting for you right
you know
now.
That. Probably in a hot tub 6 foot deep. I am the world heavyweight champion.
I have been suspended,
and personally what I've done is I've taken a leave of absence.
You have been misguided. You have been misinformed,
sir. You come out here first class?
Hulk Hogan.
How'd you get here? Delta?
Now, never mind. Hogan is the WCW.
I would have sent a Learjet.
I don't want to get into an argument with you.
You used to be my man. You used to hang around with Nature Boy. Look at this. You're custom made.
Yeah,
what are you doing aligning yourself with the likes of Hulk Hogan?
What happened to you?
What happened to me?
What happened to you? Since you were sharing.
Watch. I'll see what happened to me. It goes like this, brother. Then you got to say it one time. Woo! What happened to Nature Boy? The Nature Boy came west to Vegas. The real world heavyweight champion. You know what? I'm in a penthouse bigger than your house. Penthouse. Top of the hotel. Bigger than your home. Hulk Hogan is walking around Florida like this. He's wanting to be part of the action. You know what he wants? He wants to be able to get up in the morning and look at those little children of his, God bless them. He wants to look at all the Hulkamaniacs that take their vitamins, that think he's a big deal each and every day of their life. He wants to bring that whole thing together. The bottom line is...
Ric Flair, what about being the man? What about being the man?
Let me show you. I got to get the quick. Watch. Hey, this is about being the man, brother. Woo! This is about being the real world heavyweight champion. And Hulk Hogan, wherever you are, my friend, wherever you are, remember this. You made the mistake of jumping in with both feet, and now, my friend, you got to live with the bottom line, with the end result. And that is one wheeling-dealing, limousine-riding, kiss-stealing son of a gun that's going to walk into the bright light in the big city.
Well, he contends he is the real heavyweight champion of the world, ladies and gentlemen. Riding off into the gaming tables, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. No doubt, one of a kind.
So, Stuart, well, before we even get to Full Brawl, I think we should certainly start with the news that Ric Flair is, well, going to retire next month. Seemingly, as we read in the news, seemingly Century being asked to retire, I mean, not that you can really ask anyone to retire, with a view to essentially trying to boost the Halloween Havoc buy rate. I mean, sure, Flair's 45, and in theory at least retiring at some point soon, but I don't know, it's... In an industry where stuff like this, you know, stuff that you kind of, you're not always happy about goes on, I'd say this is a pretty low ball move by WCW.
Absolutely. You wonder if he has agreed to do it, if it's an admission on his part of the way the power base is falling in WCW. Does he realise that it is going to become the Hogan Show if it hasn't already? And does he really want to carry on as a part of that? Is he merely accepting this as a reluctant part of that power play? Or is he accepting it in a way of hoping that Hogan will eventually fail and he'll be asked to come back?
Yeah, I mean, not that we've heard anything new, but the belief is that Hogan, in one way or another, isn't going to continue beyond the end of his current deal, or at least that they are looking for him to continue beyond his current deal, because part of the belief is that they're looking to make this buy rate bigger, not, well, obviously in theory, if the buy rate becomes bigger as a result of Flair's career being on the line, it should be as a result of Flair, but I'm guessing the people that are influencing this decision are actually going to try and use this as an indicator that Hogan's drawing better money, but with a view to try and getting Hogan on a similar deal that he's on now, going into 1995. So I guess there's that, but it's, you know, I mean, yeah, from Ric Flair's point of view, if he's going to retire in the next 18 months, there are a couple of things we said. For one, as much as it might be a lowball move asking him to retire, they should try and make as much money as they can out of Ric Flair's retirement. I don't think we disagree with that. I mean, I guess you'd say, well, it should be Flair's decision as and when. But from all points of view, I guess you'd say, well, it probably should be a big money match. And it probably should be with Ric Flair, with Hulk Hogan, sorry, on the basis that who else would you do it with?
Hogan's probably going to draw the biggest money. I mean, if you wanted to look at Ric Flair's retirement match from a career perspective, Sting would be the obvious option as a final opponent, or Steamboat if his injury isn't as bad as previously thought. But money-wise, it would have to be Hogan, yeah.
Ah, and I mean, from the perspective of Hogan, you know, I think I kind of said to you before we came on air, in terms of his kind of increasing power base. I mean, you look at Hacksaw Jim Duggan wins the US Championship. Honky Tonk Man is now back with WCW. I think we mentioned that last month. And he'll be facing Johnny Bad at Halloween Havoc next month. It is kind of turning into mid-80s WWF.
Absolutely, and obviously you've got Beefcake accompanying Hogan to the ring in main event situations as well. There's another example. I mean, the Nasty Boys were there prior to Hogan's arrival, but they're big pals of his as well. They've obviously just been put in a very high babyface slot. So, yeah, it's starting to look a lot that way. You've got the Big Boss Man there as well. Who knows who will turn up next?
Well, no, that's true. That's true. I mean, in terms of the spectacle, though, next month should be a blockbuster match. Cage match, title on the line, both careers on the line. I guess people in the know might look at maybe not so much in the know, but people kind of understand wrestling a bit more might look at a double retirement stipulation and think, well, how are they going to, you know, what kind of screwy ending are they going to have when neither man retires? And I guess, you know, we've got 3 or 4 weeks before the show starts. That could certainly still happen. But the belief very much is that this is, as it seems, in that Ric Flair has agreed to retire and he will lose next month. I think from a kind of prospective show and a headline match, this is about as big, this is their big card.
Absolutely. And which point you wonder, why isn't it being saved for Starrcade, you know, a month or so down the line after that? That is theoretically their biggest show of the year. Are they trying to boost a B-level pay-per-view buy rate? Or could they milk more money out of it by hanging on and using it at Starrcade?
I wonder whether it's, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, whether it's Hogan's deals coming up and they want to be able to negotiate that off the back of a big buy rate. And obviously Starrcade rather is what, second, third week in December. And if Hogan's deal ends a week later, that doesn't give you a lot of time.
No.
I guess there's that. But anyway, that will set up that, and we're gonna do we're gonna review Full Brawl in a minute and review WCW TV. So we'll kind of tell you the story of what we've seen so far on TV and how we got there, because that happened in stages as well. We will move on to Full Brawl. Stuart, have you got the results?
I have indeed. In the opening bout, Johnny B. Badd defeated Lord Steven Regal to win the WCW World Television Championship. Kevin Sullivan with Dave Sullivan defeated Cactus Jack in a loser leaves WCW match. Ricky Steamboat, due to injury, was forced to vacate the WCW United States Championship. It was presented to Steve Austin, who was then defeated by Hacksaw Jim Duggan for him to capture the title. Pretty Wonderful defeated Stars and Stripes to retain the WCW World Tag Team Championship. Vader defeated the Guardian Angel in the first leg of the Triangle Elimination match, after which Vader and Sting went to a time limit draw, then a 5-minute overtime period, and then Vader defeated Sting in sudden death overtime. And Team Rhodes of the Nasty Boys, Dusty Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes, defeated Stable, Terry Funk, Arn Anderson, Bunkhouse Buck and Colonel Robert Parker in a War Games match.
What do you think of the show, Stuart?
It was okay. It was okay. The main event probably wasn't as exciting as a lot of the previous War Games matches, but it was certainly better than the 1993 edition. I thought Johnny B. Badd, Steven Regal, was a very, very good match. Badd is an excellent opening match babyface wrestler, and Regal's sort of unique style is starting to fit in WCW. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Steve Austin was somewhat of a travesty, and as we discussed earlier, the Hogan power play seemed to be enforced there. Vader and Sting was very, very good, but they worked very well together naturally, so you would expect that. There were some highlights, but it wasn't a blowaway show.
No, I'd be in agreement with that. I mean, the one thing that you didn't mention, because it wasn't a match, was that Hogan and Flair didn't appear on this show in ring, but they did appear on a segment that we'll hear later, which is kind of them interacting with each other in a... They're both on the phone, and there's a split screen, and, well, we'll get to it when we get to it. But no, I thought that the show was... I won't say it was saved by Vader and Sting, in the sense that the rest of the show wasn't actually all that bad, but I think that match really lifted the entire show up. I mean, we'll come to Full Brawl, the War Games match when we get to it, but I wasn't a massive fan of that, but I think that's more the format than the guys involved. But anyway, we'll start with they came live from Roanoke, Virginia. We had Martin Del Rey singing the national anthem. We open up with Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan still in his neck brace, and Mean Gene Okerlund. Schiavone calls the War Games a match between the Rhodes family and the Funk family. Whatever that means. Also revealed that Ricky Steamboat may have a neck injury ahead of his United States title match against stunning Steve Austin. First match of the night, Johnny B. Badd versus Lord Steven Regal with Sir William for the World Television Championship. Regal comes out wearing a judge's wig, wearing the gear he wore a few months back at the Clash of the Champions. As we found out from Jesse Ventura, this is the garb of Lord Rupert Regal, his great-great-great uncle. Yes, Ventura did say that on Clash of Champions a few months ago. Loud USA chants early on. Johnny B. Badd working over Regal's left arm in the early going with a lot of scientific and chain wrestling. Heenan says, quote, there are more moves in the first 5 minutes of this match than there were in the entire Michael Jackson honeymoon. Thank you, Bobby Heenan. Regal takes a stoppage as Sir William massages his left arm. Badd locks in an arm lock, and Sir William pulls out a pocket-sized Union Jack flag out of his jacket, which I thought was quite funny. Johnny Badd goes for an airplane spin and drops Regal, who's dazed on the outside. Badd then does a tope to the outside, missed completely by the camera, but not all bad. Badd then goes back into the ring, does a swan dive, but Regal ducks and Badd bounces off the ropes. Regal uses the advantage, along with some help from Sir William's cane, to gain control in the match. We cut again to the Blacktop Bully in the front row. He's been on TV for about a month or so. He's been everywhere. He did get ejected at a WCW, ejected in storyline on one, I think it was the Saturday night after Full Brawl. Johnny Badd counters with a knee lift, but only gets a warm count, then runs into a devastating European uppercut from Regal. Badd hits an automatic atomic drop, a back drop, then a head scissors, but can't even get two, let alone three. Regal dumps it to the outside. Badd goes for a sunset flip, but Regal, as he's done before, grabs on Sir William's cane. The ref kicks it off, and Badd almost scores a three. Sir William then holds Badd by the ropes, but Regal runs towards them. Badd ducks, and Sir William gets knocked off the apron. Regal goes for his own backslide, but Badd does a backslide himself and gets the free count and wins the television championship. Stuart, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, very good, very enjoyable. As I said, Bad seems to be developing into quite a good opening match babyface. The crowd seem into him. He has some flashy offense, and he seems to be able to mesh with Regal quite well. I thought it was better than their Bash at the Beach match. But, yeah, very enjoyable.
Yeah, no, again, it's one of those things where the Regal matches are generally quite good. Well, unless it's Antonio Inoki, but they're generally quite good, provided that... there's actually kind of a proper finish as there was here. It wasn't too long. The crowd were into it more than they are usually, which helped. They had a few nice spots. All in all, a very nice opener and a satisfying finish. And as you say, Stuart, well, as you said, I think, in your show review about Regal kind of fitting into his role quite nicely, fitting quite nicely as he's just about to leave, which is quite nice. And then after the match, we have Bobby Heenan says, the Queen is not going to be happy about this. Schiavone replies, when have you ever been worried about what the Queen thinks? To which Heenan goes, you're right. That was that. We then get a video recap over in the Hogan Flair angle from the Clash of Champions. Then we move on to Cactus Jack versus Kevin Sullivan with Dave Sullivan in a loser leaves town match. Sullivan can't even get into the ring before Cactus attacks him on the outside. The ball Brawl briefly makes its way into the crowd before returning to the ring. Cactus rolls up the mat at ringside, exposing the concrete, then goes to the middle turnbuckle, but as Dave Sullivan gets up and stops him from jumping, and then Kevin Sullivan climbs up, body slams him from the turnbuckle to the concrete floor with a thud, not the first one Cactus Jack will ever have taken, and nor the last he took tonight. Sullivan then does a second body slam from the floor to the concrete. Sullivan tugs in Jack's ear, which is different, but not all that silly. Back in the ring, Cactus Jack goes for a running elbow, but only gets a two count. Goes for a pile driver on the exposed concrete, but Sullivan does a back body drop. Cactus then takes another bump on the concrete floor as Sullivan clotheslines him. Cactus goes to use a chair, but Dave Sullivan stops him. Kevin then goes to use a chair, but Dave stops him as well. Cactus runs at Kevin Sullivan, ducks, runs into Dave, and then Kevin uses the distraction to roll at Cactus Jack and get the three count. Cactus Jack must lead WCW. Stuart?
Yeah, for me, this match was all about that turnbuckle bump to the concrete. It sounded horrible.
It looked horrible.
How many of those can you take in your career, honestly?
Not many.
The match itself was middling. I feel the crowd was mildly unsure on who was the babyface and who was the heel. I get the feeling Kevin Sullivan was.
Well, I don't think either of them were. Even in script, I think the babyface was Dave Sullivan.
Leaving the other two as just kind of nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't... Yeah, I mean, like, Cactus Jack turned heel about 3 weeks ago, but when you watch Kevin Sullivan on WCW TV, he's basically, part of his role is just bullying Dave Sullivan and being a knob. And like, you've got the whole thing where, you know, Cactus Jack is kind of a crowd favourite in front of the right audience, so he kind of got some cheers anyway. Kevin Sullivan's not exactly being, you know, the biggest of baby faces by slamming him repeatedly on a concrete floor, or I guess Cactus Jack did expose it. I just didn't... The match wasn't long enough to be believable as a kind of match you can get into for what in theory should be such an important stipulation. You've got the problem that you don't really know who to cheer, although I actually thought Dave Sullivan in his role was quite good in this. And the fact that just the whole thing with why so many bumps on the outside of the concrete? Like, Cactus Jack, do the one, like, end the match. That really should have been it. I don't know. He got back up and then did another three bumps, which kind of like undercut the whole thing. And yeah, the match was what, 6-7 minutes? It just wasn't all that good.
Yeah, for a 6 minute match to be taking a bump of that magnitude to the concrete, that should be the finish of a near 20 minute match rather than sort of a middle match bump for something that's going to last 6 minutes.
Yeah. No, I think the pair of them did quite well relative to kind of the framework they were given. But the framework they were given wasn't very good. And that kind of undercut the whole thing. Mean Gene Okerlund backstage with the Stub Stable. Bunkhouse Buck questions why Meng isn't wrestling, as do I. Another great Terry Funk promo, calls the Rhodes and the Nasties the FBI, the Fat Boys Incorporated. Anderson said the man has to reach inside his manhood and quit. To get us to quit, you're gonna have to kill us. We then go back to the arena and we gather an important message about the WCW United States title. Out comes Stunning Steve Austin and Ricky Steamboat. Steamboat is wearing a shirt and trousers and looks solemnly as he carries the United States title. Nick Bockwinkel says that Steamboat's injury could see him out indefinitely, so he must hand the title to Stunning Steve Austin. Schiavone quite rightly points out that that was the same plan for Hogan and Flair last month, so there was always that. Got a bit of continuity there. Steamboat says his rehab starts tomorrow and that he will be back. Austin goes to walk off and says he's out of here, but Bockwinkel says that he will wrestle for the title tonight. Out comes Hacksaw Jim Duggan carrying an American flag and a 2x4 in hand. Austin argues with Bockwinkel. The match starts. Austin says he's not doing it. Bockwinkel says he must complete or he'll be stripped of the title. Austin turns around and Duggan shoulder tackles him. Austin flips over in the air. Hacksaw does a kind of giant cartoonish swan dive onto the top of Austin for the quick 3 count and gets the victory and the title. Stuart, I mean, a lot of people like Steve Austin. A lot of people quite rightly say, you know, this guy's got something and he's one of the younger guys WCW should be pushing perhaps a fraction more than they are now, or perhaps a lot more, depending on who you want to talk to. I have some issues with it, but I actually thought this angle was really good.
No, I'm on the side of disliking it, purely because Austin is someone who's been with them for near 4 years now.
It's been a while.
It's been built up fairly well. It's had an excellent, excellent series of matches with Ricky Steamboat and a pretty decent storyline to boot with that. And to then be taken by Hacksaw Jim Duggan in 35 seconds is just kind of embarrassing. Where's the desire to see a rematch either after what's happened here?
I think there's enough ammunition for Austin to cut promos for weeks, isn't there? You know, the fact that, you know, he was given the title and then had to do a match that he didn't sign up for. And I guess actually he ends up turning as a babyface, I suppose, if you argue with that much logic.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll
get a rematch, but.
You know, my overriding point in all this is that, you know, you can have a match like this and still want to push Austin. Maybe it's not a good sign, but it doesn't have to be the end of the world. And you can use this kind of match as a catalyst for him if they want to. Now, the bigger question is do they want to, which is a kind of different argument. But I actually thought it was quite effective and the crowd went with it. I mean, I don't know whether it was just, you know, more kind of Mr. U.S. We had the USA thing in the first match with Johnny Bowden and Lord Steven Regal. We're going to get it again with Stars and Stripes next up. I don't know whether it was just because it was Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who was a guy they recognised, and maybe it was the USA thing, but the crowd went with it. And I thought Austin's facial reactions were fantastic after we lost the title. And it was an effective segment, I thought. I mean, again, I think we can discuss whether they're not pushing Austin right, but you can still make something of this going forward if you want to.
I thought the actual segment with Steamboat and Austin was handled brilliantly. I thought Austin's facial expressions while Steamboat was giving his speech and handing over the title were fantastic. And yeah, his reaction to Duggan was good, but I just questioned the wisdom of it. I did also like Duggan's post-match promo where he starts to support Hogan and criticise Flair, and he misinterprets the crowd as booing Flair and cheering for Hogan.
The crowd were pro-Flair, I think, at times.
All night.
But maybe it was a pretty good reason why they weren't there. You did just mention it, but it is next in my notes. So we had a Hacksaw Jim Duggan promo, called it the greatest night of his life, started a USA chant, and says that he's seen some bogus things in his time, but Flair running around with a world title is just about the limit. He says that Hogan will tear him apart. Next match out is the World Tag Team Championship, Stars and Stripes versus Pretty Wonderful. Bagall gets in an argument with a guy in the front row wearing the black top bully sleeveless tee. And he was escorted away here. That's right. It may have happened on TV as well, but he was the blacktop bully bloke in the front row that we've been seeing for weeks on end, was escorted away here as well. We get big Paula chance to begin with. Roma gets in some unconvincing offense early on, but Bagwell turns the tables with a hard-hitting tackle. Heenan on Patriot. Why does he wear a mask? Is he ugly? I thought it was quite funny. Stars and Stripes forcing quick tags. Bagwell looks impressive compared compared to since when we last saw him on pay-per-view. Roman does a lovely high elbow from the top turnbuckle, only to be saved when the Patriot stops the pin. Orndorff uses a distraction to beat down on Bagwell on the outside and then dumps a core of ice over Bagwell's head. Orndorff goes for a pile driver, Bagwell reverses it, but Orndorff still gets a tag on Roma. Patriot gets a hot tag and then unloads on both Orndorff and Roma. Meanwhile, Orndorff pile drives Bagwell on the outside. Because the referee didn't see the tag, Bagwell was seen as the legal man, so he got covered by Roma for the win. I'm going to come to it in the TV review, but I'm going to have to mention it now. Stars and Stripes did win the title on the episode of WCW main event that followed this show. I get the sense that because of Steamboat's injury, which they found out very late, because they were still advertising that match a few days beforehand. So they were advertising this match, you know, right until the last minute. So if they heard about Steamboat injury late, I would say they probably thought, well, we don't want to do three title changes in the first three matches. Regal's off, so we've got to get the title off him. Steamboat's injured, so we have to take the title off him. I would assume that means that then they thought, well, we don't want to do a third title change. So that got moved to TV. That, I guess, explains the kind of confusing finish on this match. But I thought it was actually quite a good match from all involved. And when you look at the four guys, you might think, well, this could be a bit of a snoozer. But it was better than I was expecting.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. Better than I was expecting is exactly the phrase I've got written down. Orndorff and Roma seem to have their act down pretty pat. They seem to know their routine. They react well to the interaction with the crowd. And Stars and Stripes were surprisingly good as well. I've not, up until this point, really been a fan of Bagwell. But again, I'll agree with you. He actually looked pretty good here.
Yeah, I mean, he looked decent along with Two Cold Scorpio back a year ago. We've barely seen him since, other than the occasional appearance on some, you know, just random episodes of TV. But this is, yeah, I think he's cast correctly as a tag team wrestler at the moment. But he's got a very good babyface look, I think. He's quite a good-looking guy. And I think he's the kind of guy, well, you know, there's a lot of things that needs work, but you can protect him in a tag team like this. I mean, I don't know, kind of... Is Stars and Stripes a bit of an obvious kind of pairing? But I guess it, you know, if we're going to go with the pro-USA thing, maybe it's better than not going with the pro-USA thing, even if it's a bit obvious. Maybe it's just because it's easier to get into. He's got more of a chance. Yeah. What do you think of the finish?
Yeah, confusing. But like you say, if they're protecting them for the TV victory, then it would make sense to do a confusing finish here. And yeah, if they didn't want to do the three title changes within four matches, then that makes sense as well.
Yeah, I mean, if I recall it correctly, I believe the TV finish ended up being the reverse of this. There was a similar confusion over who was the legal man, but this was on the Pretty Wonderful side of things on the TV show. And I think the Patriot got the victory for his team. We go backstage and Mean Gene Okerlund is backstage with the Roses and the Nasty Boys. Dusty is wearing a Nasty Boy style shirt with Nasty Dream written on it, but otherwise nothing of real note was said. We then go to the triangle match with Vader, Sting and the Guardian Angel. Sting comes out to a massive pop, but he was the odd man out, so he received the bye. So we start with the Guardian Angel versus Vader. Vader and Sting, before the match even begun, also came to blows. Guardian tells Sting to go away. He says, it's my turn for my match. You don't step in and get involved in my match. Vader heals it up to the crowd. Guardian then invites Vader to kiss his ass. The match begins, and Angel gets Vader off his feet, then drops an elbow onto his midsection. Angel hits a flying crossbody to Vader, who catches him, but buckles under the weight. On the outside, Vader goes to punch Angel, but Angel ducks, and Vader nails Race. Angel body slams Vader to a big pop, but only for a two count. Angel Irish whips Vader, but the referee goes down. Angel hits a sidewalk slam, but the ref can't count it. Harley Race comes in and does a diving headbutt, and then Vader hits the Vader bomb on Angel for the three count. Shoot, this was the first part of this match. It was fine for what it was, not too long, and kind of just a precursor to the second match, I think.
Yeah, it was okay. It was a bit slow, which I think the announcers tried to cover for on commentary by explaining how neither man would want to expend all their energy in this first match, which I thought was a good way of covering for the pace. Yeah, it was okay. It was nothing blow away. Vader's always good and played his role well. Guardian Angel, I thought, came off slightly heelishly with his comments to Sting at the start.
Anything specific he said, or just telling him to go away?
Just telling the biggest babyface in the company to go away. You know, you could have done it in a slightly more respectful way of, you know, I want to win this match kind of thing. I know I can do it, rather than go away, this is my match.
I kind of felt like it fits the Guardian Angel, well, big boss man type character. I don't think the verbiage was out of context. But no, I know what you mean. I guess if you're a face and you're telling a bigger face to go away, the crowd reaction is going to be to hate on you. I suppose that's that.
And sardis.
Yeah, completely. So anyway, that match ends and Sting comes out. Vader, who removed his mask during the match, resets it. Sting stands up to Vader and Vader looks a bit fearful. Sting takes Vader off his feet with a drop kick. Vader sets for a Vader bomb and lands it. Goes for a second, but Sting gets up and kicks him. Vader resets soon after, jumps off for a second Vader bomb. This time Sting rolls out of the way. Sting then clotheslines him over the top rope and suplexes Race. Sting then suplexes Race on the outside. Sting hits a lovely high angle suplex on Vader and whips up the crowd. Hits a splash from the top, then goes for a running splash, but Vader gets his knees up. Vader goes for a Vader salt, but Sting rolls out the way. Hits a superplex on Vader, then turns to the crowd, who respond in kind. Sting hits a running elbow drop, then another, but the cover only results in a two count. Sting then begins slugging Vader in the corner before hitting a clothesline for another two count. The pace of the match noticeably slowed after about 10 minutes. Vader going for a breather into the second ring. Of course, this is War Games, four brawls. We have two rings set up for the evening. Sting hits a flying clothesline into the second ring, then another, then a splash from the top, but only gets a two count. The referee continued on in the other ring, so it was essentially the same part of the ring. Vader goes to the top, to jump from the top, but Sting counters it into a scoop slam as Vader flies through the air. Sting goes for a scorpion deathlock with 15 seconds of normal time. Vader then grabs the ropes as we enter overtime. Overtime period, I believe, is 5 minutes. Vader hits Sting with a big suplex in the first part of overtime. Sets for a superplex, but Sting fights out the corner and drops Vader to the canvas. They get back to the top, and Sting flips Vader off the top into the ring. Into the final minute, Vader hits a splash, but Sting kicks out. Vader hits a powerbomb, but can't get the pin in time to get the pin. So we go to sudden death. Sudden death basically being the first person to get knocked off his feet would lose the match. Gary Capetta goes to make the announcement, but Harley Race runs over and shouts, "Are you insane?" at him, which I thought was quite funny. Vader unloads a series of punches on Sting. Sting slumps over in the corner. Sting then fires a punch and another to the crowd to go, and the crowd go with it. Harley Race climbs on the top rope. Guardian Angel comes after. Nick Patrick abandons his role as referee and just runs after Angel and Harley Race as they run up the ramp. Vader is down, but the masked man who attacked Hulk Hogan at the Clash of the Champions blindsides Sting, hits his knee again. Vader gets up. Nick Patrick returns. Sting is down, clutching his knee, and Vader wins. Stuart, again, this is kind of WCW taking something really, really good and kind of just adding their own complications to it. But this was really good, other than the bits that didn't involve the match.
Yeah, agreed again completely. If there's two people I think I could watch wrestle each other all day, it would be Vader and Sting, because they're both so perfectly cast in their roles. Sting as the babyface and Vader as the big bully heel. Yeah, the match to me was very confusing. The triangle elimination match, I thought that implied to me that then the third person would wrestle the first person. Obviously, it wasn't that. It was a sort of gauntlet match, but with only two stages. And yeah, what was the point of having a time limit if you're just going to go exactly into overtime?
I don't know. And particularly as this show ended like 15 minutes early at the end, like one of the point, why not just keep going? Yeah, I mean, I just think you could have just had this match run through and then end it with
the masked man angle, if that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah, and just get rid of all the crap in the middle with overtime. But perhaps, maybe legitimately, they wanted to give Vader some breaks. Maybe. Yeah.
But I don't feel the finish makes him look particularly strong either. You know, not.
No, I just mean physical breaks in terms of rather than him wrestling for 25 minutes flat out. But no, I mean, I think in terms of the booking at the end was fine. That made a lot of sense. And I'm guessing we're, as I understand it, the mask guy is still meant to be, Mr. Perfect.
Arn Anderson, I think, under the mask, isn't it?
Yes, it is Arn Anderson, but it's not meant to be Arn Anderson, but yeah, yeah, basically. But the match was excellent. I mean, Sting just, it's almost like in other matches, like I don't see this side of Sting, perhaps as often as I should, but it's almost like Sting knows exactly the role he needs to be in against Vader. He knows the kind of work he needs to put in. He kind of almost seems to become a bit more athletic than where he was if he's facing somebody else, because he knows, well, Vader's quite a big, slow guy, so I'm going to have to compensate by, you know, being a bit more agile, if that makes sense. And I thought it worked perfectly.
Yeah, I absolutely have to agree with you. The suplex spot on Vader as well, I thought, was impressive. And it was very much delayed as well to bring him up and take him back down again. I thought the crowd bought into that as well.
You know, Hulkster, at this point in time, after defeating you just recently and being crowned the real world champion for the 12th time, I'm not sure I want back into business. What could you possibly offer me that would bring Ric Flair out of the luxury and the lifestyle that I'm in right now back into the sport of professional wrestling?
Well, you know, brother, you are the biggest rat fink in the game, brother. The dirtiest player in the game. By the last time we went out of the shoot, I know that blackjack attack, brother, on the back of the Hulkster's leg was all part of your plan, dude. And oh yeah, the figure four, when you locked that thing on the tree trunks, brother, even though my leg was already snapped in half, for 1 second, brother, I forgot who I was. And that little squeaky referee, he may have heard me yell in pain. Maybe even I did say I had enough. But then when I heard the Hulkamaniacs, I got my act back together and put an end to it all. The thing is, Ric Flair, even with a bad wheel, even with a sneak attack, I took the best you had to offer. But since you're so afraid to get back in the ring with Hulk Hogan...
Rewind that one, big man. The word's not afraid. The word is laid back, relaxing, 12 times. You see this? If you had a camera in front of you, you'd see where the real World Heavyweight Championship belt is sitting. Right here between a bevy of beauties, pal.
Okay.
You're talking to Ric Flair. I'm out here in Vegas. Where are you right now?
Okay, brother. You're right. You're right, and I'm wrong, like always, okay?
Yeah.
But seeing how you always have the upper hand, how you always out-wrestle me, and how you have the real world heavyweight title, well, wouldn't you just like to get rid of Hulk Hogan once and for all, brother? Wouldn't you like that?
If I thought that I'd never have to hear your name again, I'd walk to the end of this earth, pal. Hey, let's get three things straight right now.
Maybe that's why, Ric Flair, you are the real world's heavyweight champion. So I tell you what, I'm going to make you an offer that you can't refuse. With a bad knee, brother, with a victory on your side, because you did get your hand raised last time, brother. And maybe you even did hear Hulk Hogan squeal a little bit in pain when you put the figure four on me, brother. I am now going to tell you that if you will climb back in the ring with me for one last time, if you get your hand raised, if you can beat me right in the center of the ring with that figure four leg lock, brother, I put my whole wrestling career on the line. I will quit the WCW.
Wait. You're telling me that if I can beat you, that you will retire and leave the sport of professional wrestling forever?
Brother,
I heard you say?
You heard it, dude. If you can beat me, if you can get Nick Bockwinkel to get you and me together... Yeah, you heard it. On the same piece of paper, I will put my career on the line. I will do what you want. I will hand you my career on a silver platter, and you'll never see Hulk Hogan again.
Just
that's
a,
if you beat
girls,
me.
Girls, Hogan, I don't know what you've been doing the last month, but if you're saying that you will leave the sport of wrestling, if I beat you, my friend, you can make that match right now. Look, let me run something by you. There are three very valid points you need to review as you get in your car right now from wherever you are and drive home. The first one is that I heard you on national television say, I quit. I give up. I heard it, and the wrestling world heard it. The second thing you need to remember is that I left that ring last time, the winner, with the world championship belt. It's sitting on the table in front of me right now, right here at the Mirage in Las Vegas. Four good-looking women, the Nature Boy, it's the way life ought to be. And thirdly, and most importantly, if you're willing to put your career on the line, if you're willing to take that big reputation, that big name, all that notoriety, that fame, that money, and put it on the line and wrestle me... to the winner takes all, pal, you got it.
We then get the Flair Hogan promo via satellite. Hogan working out his gym, Flair entertaining some ladies in Las Vegas. Split screen, they're both on the phone talking to each other. Flair says he's retired. Hogan admits that he may have said he had enough at the Clash of the Champions and may have submitted. I don't know why he said that. Hogan then offers Flair the chance to retire him if he can beat him. Flair accepts, and after Hogan puts the phone down, Hogan, talking to Gene Oakland on the video wall in the entrance ramp, takes off the strapping on his knee and says that his knee is actually far better. Stuart, I don't mind the idea here, because I think it was fairly clever to try and get an organic segment between the two guys and realizing, well, we're telling the story that Flair has just been in Vegas all month and he's effectively retired. The execution was wonky. I'd say it's a bit kind of spotty in terms of, you know, at times it didn't seem like they could hear each other, which I guess at least kind of tells you about the validity of the call.
Yeah.
But it was a bit choppy and there's the basic logic flaw of why is Hogan putting his career on the line just for a title match for a title that he's already got.
Yeah. Did you spot very early on in this segment as well where they muted the arena microphones?
Yes, who are very pro-Flair and anti-Hogan.
Absolutely, and it was obviously a very wise decision to do it as a out-of-the-arena segment as, yeah, if you'd have tried to get this message across in something in the arena, it would have come across like Flair was the biggest babyface in the world, I think. And there was something just sort of hokey about the way Hogan was and is, and I guess there'll be people that have been saying that for nearly 10 years now. But when he's kind of on the phone cutting his typical promo down the line to some random woman, Flair just came across so much better in this segment up until the point where he falls for the really base reverse psychology. It got a point across, but I just question the methods of how they got there.
I will give them credit for trying something different. And I think given the kind of the scenario they had with, you know, neither guy was at the arena, neither guy flew in. Flair, quote unquote, in Vegas, not say that segment was necessarily shot there. Hogan kind of just in his gym. So I'll give them credit for trying something different. But you're right, Hogan is essentially cutting a promo down a phone line because Flair's surrounded by about three women at this table, at this bar.
And looks like this guy in the world, let's be honest.
What was that?
He looks like the coolest guy in the world with his belt surrounded by women in Vegas. Like, who, as you know, as typical wrestling fans, who wouldn't watch that and want to be Ric Flair?
Yeah, the heel. But I did like how we got there. But anyway, well, I say we got there. We cut back and Nick Bockwinkel's out on the stage with me and Gene Oakland. Bockwinkel says that Hogan has pre-warned him about what he planned to offer Flair. Says the match has been granted at Halloween Havoc and that Flair has been reinstated. Bockwinkel says that along with Hogan's career being on the line, the match will be held inside a steel cage. Me and Gene Oakland was apoplectic at the news, which didn't make sense to me, given that, because he basically said, you're gonna put two behemoths inside a steel cage. Surely, given what happened last month, you'd want it in a steel cage, if you were me, Gene Oakland.
He also tries to pass off that who would want to see that when surely everyone would want to see that. Yeah, very odd.
Ask
Nick Bockwinkel what he was smoking as well, which was an interesting line, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know why me and Gene was so angry. You'd think that'd be the thing. But anyway, just to cut in here briefly, just to say that at this point in time, that was the stipulation that signed. And the actual bit with Flair's career on the line, we haven't actually seen yet, but that's where we're at the moment. Anyway, we get to the main event. Michael Buffer out introducing War Games. Fireworks go off as the cage is lowered. We see the video from Saturday night as Meng was removed from the match. I have no idea why. Basically, it was Saturday night about 2 weeks before the show. Me and Gene Oakland with the five guys there, and he says that they've ordered that Meng be removed from the match and Colonel Ron Parker be added to the match, and nobody knows why. It made no sense. There was no logical reason to do it. They didn't even try to explain it. I didn't get it. Well, other than the fact that they were going to beat him and they had to beat somebody and they didn't want to beat Meng.
Yeah, it's very odd, and there's no explanation given other than it's on this piece of paper.
Yeah. Word. There it is. But yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say, and we'll come through it when we get to the TV review as well, is that it does seem like they wanted to keep Meng strong, so I guess you take him out of the match, he doesn't have to be one on the losing side or two take a fall. So Conor Rock Parker was introducing his match in his place. So the War Games, the main event, the stud, excuse me, The stud stable, Terry Funk, Bunkhouse Buck, Arn Anderson and Colonel Robert Parker with Meng defeated versus Dustin Rhodes, Dusty Rhodes and the Nasty Boys. The only way to win is by submission. So we begin the match with Dustin and Arn Anderson. We got some unique moves as Dustin hung Anderson by his legs, whose head was hanging between the two rings, which was quite good. Dustin goes for a ring to ring shoulder tackle to Anderson, uses the top of the cage for leverage to kick Anderson, goes for a half Boston crowd. The referee botches the coin toss, but the heels win and Bunkhouse Buck comes in to claim the advantage. The pair double team him, ram his head into the cage, paired to a double team Boston crowd in front of Dusty in the first ring. Jerry Sags comes in to level up the numbers. Sags rams Buck off the cage for ramming Anderson's head into the cage also, then hits a spike pile driver on Buck and Dustin gets back to his feet. Terry Funk, the next man in, tries to throw a chair into the cage. That was a roof, which was quite funny. I love Funk, and it suits Funk being mental, so I'm more than fine with it. Funk takes off his boot and then falls between the two sets of ropes, trying to hit Dustin. Where are my notes? Funk scales the inside of the cage to work over Dustin before getting crotched on the ropes. Sags pile drives Funk between the two rings, and Funk falls down the gap and disappeared. And I'll be honest, Stuart, we'll come to this at the end. I thought Funk should have just left the match.
Yeah.
He climbed back out, and I thought it would have been far better if he'd never been featured again. Love Funk.
Him. Yeah, brilliant.
That would have been great. But he didn't. He does resurface soon after. So Knob's in next. He unloads on all of the heels as the faces regain control. Colonel Parker is the next man in. He and his team are in a bad place as he enters the match, and understandably Parker is quite reluctant. Parker refuses to come in, but eventually does and unloads on Dustin until he manages to injure his hand. Parker uses his belt on Sags. Dustin uses a belt on Funk and Buck. Dustin then unloads on Anderson and Parker, two with the belt. Dusty waits on the outside as the crowd chant his name. Dusty gets inside, locks in the figure four on Parker. The Nasty Boys both do simultaneous splashes on him, and Parker submits. Meng is not happy. Stuart, your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, like I said, I thought it was average as far as War Games matches go, but certainly better than last year. It's a good story. I do like the angle, and I do like the stud stable, but once you knew Robert Parker was in the match, it was obvious who was going to be taking the fall. I would have expected it to be Dustin to get the win over him, though, as the story's been more about Dustin than Dusty, but he was kind of not really involved in the finish.
No, I think he was in the other ring.
Yeah, he was fending off everybody else while Dusty, and the Nasties figure forward and splashed him, but you would have expected him to be involved in the finish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I don't know, I may well end up having this discussion every time we review War Games matches on this show, but I watched the one last year, and admittedly, everyone says Lashley was probably the worst one ever, so I kind of take that as a given. But I came to this one, and I thought, because Lashley was almost the first one I saw, so I thought, well, you know what, it's a bad one, but fair enough. So I'll go back and I'll watch some of the others. I watched one from 92, which allegedly is one of the best, and I watched one, I want to say from 88 or 89, it was one involving the Head Shrinkers, the Freebirds, the Road Warriors, Paulie Dangerously was there, and there was a couple of others, I think. No, Paulie Dangerously wasn't there. Jim Cornette was, and there was a couple of others as well. And I just don't get the War Games match. I don't see the appeal. I've watched four of them now. I don't think any of them were any good of any note. I mean, sure, the 92 one was better than these two, the 93 one and this one just here, but just the format doesn't work for me. You know, the whole thing with, we're going to have, you know, kind of one, like, no wrestling match should take 3 minutes to explain. They have to do that every year just to explain, like, the long-winded, convoluted segment of this match. Then you've got the double ring thing, which I don't think is all that effective because the action is impossible to follow. You've got the problem with this one in particular, given that they banned blood. So you do all these ramming off the cage shots and you can't do any blood, which is a similar problem that Bret and Owen had last month.
Yeah.
And then you just got all the things as well. I don't like a wrestling match where it can't end before, like, I don't like watching that where it can't end or you at least can't eliminate people. I just think all guys would be far better if we had the staggered entrance, but you can eliminate people at any time. We have this problem where you've got to wait 15 minutes before kind of anyone could even be submitted. So you're just watching what I think is kind of meaningless action. And then you've got the problem, as we had last year and in this, in the, because it's eight guys in the ring, or the ten as we've seen previously, you've got to put a few of them on the wrong side of the ring and have them not be smart enough to think, oh, hang on, Colorado Parker's in a bit of trouble here. I might go over and break that up. It doesn't do anything for me, really, this kind of match. And maybe I'll find a good one, or maybe I'll come to it, and maybe I need to have a run of a really good story. Because this has been good, but once Robert Parker got involved, you knew how it was going to end. But I don't get the War Games format. I don't think it's all that good.
Okay, fair enough. There's definitely good ones and there's definitely bad ones. I like I say, in terms of story, I think this one was actually built up pretty well. I see your point about how nothing can happen. And yeah, maybe it would be more interesting if you had a sort of Survivor Series style format of elimination at any time. But yeah, I enjoy the match as a gimmick in general.
And then we've got the whole thing with the coin toss, where like the babyfaces are never going to win. If the babyface team win a War Games coin toss, you know, shoot the guy booking it. But I don't know. I just feel it could be better. But it's just the whole thing where you've got the eight guys in the ring. You can't really follow what's going on, what anything really is going on. And then you've got that point. But that all being said, I did think the match was, again, within the remit of the match they were given, I thought we did a very good job. Dustin looked good. I don't think anyone particularly looked bad here. Robert Parker plays well, quite well. Dusty Rhodes was mega over. As you say, probably putting too much focus on him and not enough focus on his son. Terry Funk's fantastic, but Terry Funk's always fantastic. And I still think when he got pile driven through between the gap between the two rings, he should have just disappeared. He got back up really quickly as well. It's not like he just resurfaced like after a normal amount of time. He was back about 10 seconds later.
Meng looked like an incredible badass on the outside. The degree to which he was shaking the ring made him look like an animal.
Yeah, and did he try to climb in at some point as well, like climbing on top?
The Nasty Boys knocked him off, yeah.
That's right. But anyway, this was about like 2.5 hours into the show, and we ended really early. We had about 5 or 10 minutes with Mean Gene Okerlund and Bobby Heenan and Tony Schiavone saying that, well, you know, that's this, and they were talking about Halloween Havoc and that kind of thing. It was entered a kind of a post show at that point. They did promise clips. They did say that Meng was going mental backstage, but we didn't actually get to see it. They said if we don't get to show you it now, we'll show you it on the next issue of WCW TV. Which brings me to the WCW TV review. This is obviously counting a little bit of stuff before Full Brawl, but most of my TV reviews is the show afterwards. But on the 11th of September, we get a promo from Ric Flair in Las Vegas, which you heard at the very top of this segment, wearing the WCW World Title Belt, not the actual one, but a slightly modified version. It says it was a mistake Hogan left the WWF and comes to WCW. Flair claims that he is the world champion and says he's quote unquote taking a leave of absence. Fast forward to the September 24th, 25th weekend of Saturday night, a main event. Honky Tonk Man wins a squash match and he will face Johnny B. Badd for the TV title at Halloween Havoc. Dave Sullivan gets involved in the Hogan-Ric Flair storyline. Flair is back once he gets reinstated by Bockwinkel. He returns for the final set of TV. He is in the main event of main event, and he will face Dave Sullivan. Hogan supposedly gives Sullivan the boots he used to face Andre the Giant, whether you believe that or not. We also get a video from a press conference after Full Brawl in Detroit, featuring comments from Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. Nothing massive was said, just building their match in Halloween Havoc. Muhammad Ali was also in attendance. The show made running for his foundation, which is why he was there. But he didn't say anything at the press conference, or at least if he did, it didn't air. We then got that clip of Meng viciously beating up the Nasty Boys after Full Brawl. He was flanked by Funk, Buck, Anderson and Parker. The Rhodes were nowhere to be found. Stars and Stripes defeated Pretty Wonderful for the tag team titles in a reverse of what happened at Full Brawl with a similar kind of disintegration in terms of the referee confusing who was a legal man. The main event, Ric Flair attacked Dave Sullivan before the start of the main event, but Sullivan somehow got the upper hand until Flair ambushed him with his robe. Hogan came out to clean house. Sullivan came out and tried to hit Dave, but Hogan stands up for Dave. And that's the end of my WCW TV notes.
Mikey, I told you I was going to take you under my wing. So here's a lesson for today. Don't you ever, ever confuse the words Cactus Jack and greatness. Because I ain't great. I got the World Tag Team Championship. It don't make us great. You wear the World Tag Team Championship, and Mikey, I'm sorry to break it to you, but you're not all that great. The Public Enemy is great, but on that night in Philadelphia, maybe we were just a little lucky, or maybe destiny was looking us in the eye. But either way, we walked out with the straps, and now they're strapless, and now they're mad. Sting got mad at me once.
You knocked your teeth out.
Bang, bang! Vader got mad at me once.
You ripped your ear off.
Bang, bang! And you know what I say? Thank you, because you look at this face, you look at this ear, and you look at this teeth, and you look at the history of professional wrestling, Mikey. They're all here. From Abdullah to Zabisco, the A to Z of professional wrestling, they've all made their mark. So now I say, Public Enemy, show me just how great you are. Make your mark on the face of Cactus Jack, and you will live in infamy forever. Mikey, the Public Enemy is real, real mad. You know what that means?
It means I'm gonna die.
He likes it. Mikey really, really likes it. And Public Enemy, bang, bang, he's gonna prove it to you.
Anderson. Probably works out from the clip we just heard. We're moving on to ECW. I'm being joined by Del Muir. Del, good evening.
Hi, Bob.
Del, we'll kick off with the TV review.
Yep, the first thing this month, we've actually got new ECW Tag Team Champions. Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck filling in for the absent Terry Funk beat the Public Enemy in September 13th Hardcore TV. This ends in your 6 month reign with the titles as the Public Enemy held the belt since March. With Terry Funk going, Tommy Dreamer was Cactus's original partner for the night, but would suffer a beatdown at the then champions prior to the match. Jack then went backstage and found Mikey to be his new partner. The match was one of the highlights of the month in ECW TV, getting nearly 15 minutes airtime. Mikey pinned Rocco Rock after he'd been crotched in the top rope by Cactus for the finish. And moving on, a huge month for ECW this month with debuts, mostly utilising some of the well-renowned talent from the recent NWA title tournament. Chris Benoit defeated the Rotten Rebel in a match pretty much set up so that Jason and Bad Chad could turn on the Rebel at the match's close. Also, Dean Malenko would turn up with a shooter gimmick, batting up Jason in the ring for his matches. While Jason distracted the referee prior to the match starting, Malenko would shoot on Jason's opponent, locking in a swift, devastating submission move. This came to a head in the final episode this month with the Tasmaniac coming out after a Jason match, but despite being put in an arm lock by Malenko, he would become the first person to escape and put on a hold of his own. Another debut this month for the company was Matt Bourne. WWF fans might know him better as the original Doink the Clown. He's now the new backup for ECW World Champion Shane Douglas. Bourne's been limited so far to a few cameos in Douglas promos, but his history hasn't been ignored. He's wearing partial clown makeup, and Douglas himself referenced how he was previously misused as a cartoon character. He's being advertised with the name Bourne again for house shows at the back end of this month. And last off, it's been said that Terry Funk missed the taping last month where the NWA title tournament was held because he'd found out about the booking plans for the show.
Del, we'll start with the Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck defeating the Public Enemy to win the ECW World Tag Team titles. Your thoughts on the match and the promos we also saw, which were kind of mostly on September the 13th, and then there was another promo a week later.
That's it. They can intersperse it during the month. Obviously, the match itself took place in the fateful night of August the 27th, and it seems as if it was kind of booked on the fly, obviously, with the Terry Funk situation coming out of left field. But it is an interesting partnership, obviously, Cactus the veteran, Mikey the kind of whippy underdog. But I mean, it is something that certainly seems to have legs, even just based on, the promos during the month on Hardcore TV. The two guys are over with the crowd. They're obviously totally different with regards to their personalities and their characters, but they do seem to be meshing well together, and obviously kind of be a bad thing for Mikey to be in with Cactus, obviously with the trials and tribulations he's been through. There's probably nobody better that he could learn from.
No, completely. I mean, I think it is quite a good partnership, and they've, I think they've done a good job with Mikey Whipwreck in the sense that He's been on TV now for a few months, and he is getting a little bit better. You know, he's still the underdog, he's still the novice and the guy with not much offense. But I like that they haven't just kept him as that kind of a flat line in terms of his ability. He is starting to add moves, he is starting to get a little bit of confidence. One thing we saw, I think it was on September the 20th show, was that they came out afterwards to interfere in a, or it might be the week, it might be the last week actually, where they came out for a Public Enemy match after the match was over, and Cactus Jack came out kind of pulling Mikey Whitrock by the ear, and he kind of like gave him a pep talk, and Mikey charged the ring like ahead of Cactus Jack, and that was kind of him building confidence, and together they cleaned house, and yeah, I think it's an effective partnership, and I don't think Mikey Whitrock's going to win many awards or anything like that, but in terms of the character he's playing, it's very, very good viewing, and that's all you can really say about it. And given that they came up with the partnership on the fly, pretty much,
exactly.
Because Terry Funk didn't fly in for the taping, quite an effective move.
That's it, and as you say, Whitbreak's never going to be certainly in the near future, doesn't seem as if he's going to be any kind of world champion, but there is a definite evolution there, and Cactus is only going to highlight that. I mean, it's worrying when you've seen him losing the TV title, because that was the gimmick. He kind of flew in out of the middle of the night, won that out of nowhere, and then when they lost it to Jason, you kind of wondered, is that them? They've maybe had their fill of the young guy, but he does seem to be evolving and being with Cactus. As I say, it's certainly showing an early evolution, and hopefully that continues.
We will have touched on it earlier in the show, but in terms of Cactus Jack, obviously now no longer with WCW.
I'd heard that, yep.
He's now ECW's guy, in theory. I mean, not that he'll be ECW exclusive, but that's a significant coup, in theory, if they can keep him around for a little bit, to have a guy who was, let's not forget, about a year ago was, well, no, 11 months ago, at Halloween Havoc, he was in the main event title match for the WCW
World. Yeah, he was challenging, yeah.
And now he's here as ECW Tag Team Champion. It's a real coup for them.
That's it, and I mean, if you look at where he was in WCW, where he was kind of seemingly drawing back that character and the bumps and things he was taking, another nice wee shot, if anybody wants to catch up on the Hardcore TV for the month, was a wee homage to the WCW tag belt incident where he'd recreated it with Mikey, which I thought was a nice touch. It seems to be that he's behind the company, and the company's definitely behind him. And as I say, it can only be, it's maybe a short-term thing with the two of them together with the tag titles, but I think that the both of them is going to get a lot out of it. With Cactus now being away for WCW and with ECW, I think he'll get a lot out of Mikey as being kind of 18, 19 years of age and kind of having that fire in his belly without knowing the twists that's going to be on the road. I think Cactus will get a lot out of that, and obviously Cactus is going to teach a lot to Mikey as well.
Let's look at there were more than three debuts, but let's look in particular at the debuts of Omari Nishimura, Dean Malenko, and Chris Benoit, guys who came in for the NWA title tour.
Yeah.
The way Malenko's been featured, I would suggest he's going to be back. We know Chris Benoit is back. He'll be facing Sabu on October the 1st at one of their big kind of house show event. All these guys come in with, you know, some fairly big reputation. We've seen Benoit on WCW pay-per-views before. Malenko's a guy who's got a lot of history in Japan, and Nishimura's obviously quite a big Japanese name as well.
Yeah.
I'd say three very important gets, and in terms of a 3-week run of TV, these guys added to it a lot.
That's it. I mean, if you look back to this time last month, we were building up to the NWA title tournament, and there was a few names in there that maybe some people wouldn't be familiar with. But I mean, this was a month pretty much built off debuts, really. I mean, there was a few follow-ups from last month with Shane Douglas, as you would expect.
And some
Cactus
stuff with Tommy Dreamer and Sandman
building to
an I Quit match on October the 1st
that we'll cover next month. But see, it was a huge month for debuts. Benoit and Malenko obviously being the kind of North American link. We'll focus on them first. It was a couple of brilliant kind of ideas that we were seeing for them this month, as we've said about the Jason spot with Malenko. He's played it perfectly. And as we teased on the last episode of Hardcore TV this month, the idea of a Malenko Tasmaniac match is money. It's really mouthwatering, kind of the idea they two been in a been in a match, even just the face-off, and then getting Tasmaniac taking Malenko down for the first time that we've seen in ECW was really exciting. I know your favourite match of the month was the tag title match with the Public Enemy and Cactus and Mikey. Mine's was Benoit and Nishimura. I think it was on the last episode again of the month. I thought it was a brilliant TV match. And looking on from last month with the Eastern turning to Extreme, it was a bit of a worry at the time that could maybe be a big focus of the show going forward, where you're maybe going to be looking at an hour of people getting battered with several different weapons. And having this as a seemingly an undercard for the minute, I think it's really, really exciting for the company.
Yeah, I think other than the title match at the front where Tommy Dreamer ended up going through a table, I don't think there was really any violence on any of the shows.
There wasn't a lot. There was a few flashbacks, obviously, with Dreamer and Sandman, because obviously they're still trying to build that.
But they had versions of that on every show, which I don't even think I would complain about. I mean, it was slightly different. They cut them together slightly differently editing-wise, but
yep.
Certainly that package of the Dreamer Sandman thing from the end of last month, they had at least twice.
I think they know, Bob, but after the events, obviously, last month, they know there's going to be new eyes in this product, and I think that's the main reason that they've done it, is you've going to hear about it, you want to see it, and then they'll kind of show you this, bang, here's the new breed coming through as well. So I think they've been pretty smart in how they've showed that.
Thoughts on Matt Bourne? Bourne again?
They've managed to somehow do something that I never thought I would see, and it's Doink the Clown is a genuinely intriguing, exciting character. I think if you'd have said that to anybody a couple of months ago, they'd maybe look at you a bit funny. But it's actually been made original. It's really interesting seeing him, even just in the background. You can see him the first week on Hardcore TV, and you have to look twice. And it's like, that's that guy from WWF.
He is pretty unrecognisable, but he's going around kind of having like, because they did a promo after kind of the... I can't remember exactly what happened in the title tournament last month, but in theory, I think Shane Douglas interfered in the 9-1-1 Too Cold Scorpio semi-final.
That's it.
Match.
It was Scorpio getting en route to the final. Douglas had come out. I think he was actually dressed up as Doink.
And then Matt Bourne came out.
That led to the 9-1-1. Was it a count out to close? Yeah. I think.
Yeah, that meant that Too Cold Scorpio advanced to the final. But yeah. So Bourne kind of in like partial makeup, and he had his kind of hair like just sat down and wasn't really in a lot of ring gear. But that was kind of in the immediate aftermath. He cut these promos, so he kind of, you can tell where that's going. But I like the fact that, because it fits Shane Douglas's character to reference Bourne as Doink the Clown, because Shane Douglas walked out to the ring one of the weeks this month and just said, "Screw Ric Flair." You know,
yep.
just
buying into the karma. Yeah.
This isn't building to anything. I don't think Ric Flair is going to be appearing at the ECW arena anymore.
Well, that's it. They've not got him booked for November, and this is him planting the seed. That's basically Shane Douglas' shtick, is he just calls out the who he sees as below him, whether it's a WWF champ, whether it's a WCW champ. You could probably go to Guatemala, and he's got a bit of an issue with their mid-card.
Yeah.
He's just got that kind of talent where he can mouth off, but he can back it up as well. And having Bourne there, it's a Christmas present to Douglas, obviously being able to refer to that and kind of slighting the other companies for, you made a mess of this guy, he's with me now, we've gone to the top. But it's really interesting how ECW seem to be almost kind of breaking that fourth wall down, where they're not afraid to mention where someone's came from, but there's even less afraid of showing what they can do with him. And I think they kind of see it as a bit of a challenge to say, you got him this far, let's see how far we can get him.
Or you misused him this much, let's see like how wrong you were, that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly, and it's really interesting where they take it. As I said, they've kind of stripped back the makeup to an extent, but there's still that smatter in there. I mean, it's almost as if they've brought in Doink the Clown. They've kind of just roughed them up a bit into the ECW initiation, and now we'll just see where they take it. And as I say, it's got me intrigued for next month.
No, completely. One more thing before I move on quickly on Matt Bourne, Doink the Clown. I think one thing that they did tend to underline a fair bit in WWF without any real kind of rhyme or reason was kind of how quote unquote good Doink the Clown was as a wrestler. I know Colin said it on the show last year.
That's that. I mean, as a worker, he's really revered, I think. I mean, he was never, it is a case where now we're maybe getting to see, instead of Doink, we are seeing Matt Bourne, we are seeing this Bourne again character that was built up, because I mean, he is seemingly revered among his peers for being a solid worker. He's respected by the guys that he's working with, and I mean, now it's maybe a first chance for us to actually see who this man is, the man literally behind the mask.
To quickly, before we finish, let's focus on just two other names. Nishimura, the wrestler from Japan, and Too Cold Scorpio, who've both been in action this month. Scorpio's going to be back to face Shane Douglas on the 1st of October show. Two more guys who I think come in with a bit of profile. Not massive names. Too Cold Scorpio was kind of a WCW undercard guy, the one guy at the end of last year I was talking quite highly as a guy who I believe could have had quite an important 1994, although not as it turned out in WCW. But two guys again with a bit of pedigree, and I think it's testimony that they brought in kind of four or five names of real significance. And all of a sudden the roster feels really deep.
That's it. It's, I mean, looking back the last couple of months, it's, the thickness of that roster's doubled easily. And I mean, you can look back, as I say, even just to that one night with the title tournament, we're having all their names under the one roof, and then looking at them now with a full monthly TV, it's basically just filled out the show. Nishimura, I think, has been booked perfectly. As I say, it was my match of the month with Benoit, but Benoit's obviously done a lot of work over in Japan, so it's one of the kind of classic ECW traits, the kind of building somebody up for what they perceive as their strengths, putting those two together, it just makes perfect sense. They've both got histories of that kind of particular style, and it just worked to perfection in that match of the month for me. And I mean, I think it's just a testament to, I think, how big their vision is for this company. They only obviously done the name change last month, and you're already talking about strengthening that roster. And Too Cold Scorpio obviously got to the final of the tournament. Again, another solid TV month for him. The moves that you'll see him do, it's rare you'll see anybody else doing them, no matter what company you're looking at.
Yeah, I think he did a corkscrew moonsault at one point and then went, no, I'm going to do my 450 splash.
Yeah.
So, well, if you can, you might as well. And to finish, the one thing we can say is that Terry Funk missed the tapings of this set of shows, and yet, he wasn't missed in terms of, I don't remember thinking, God, the show misses Terry Funk.
That's it. I mean, you see him, obviously, like, was talking 27th of August, that, and you didn't, I mean, we're great fans of him, obviously, you maybe a bit more than myself, but you certainly got to respect what that man does. And again, like a Cactus Jack with Mikey Whipwreck, role as a veteran, you can never have too many for the younger guys coming in to listen to. I mean, especially the amount of debuts that we've seen this month, they would learn from a minder like Terry Funk. Whether it's the end of him in ECW, we'll maybe need to wait and see. But I mean, you can certainly respect the kind of thoughts behind his decision last month. Obviously,
well,
the history
former NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
The history that he's got with that title, you can understand it, but fingers crossed from a viewer point of view, plus obviously the guys in the back that could learn off him. I hope we see him again.
And that will end the ECW wrap-up for this month. Del Muir, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks very much, Bob.
You're on Twitter.
I am. It's Del_Muir on Twitter. DEL_MUIR.
Excellent. And to play us out for this part of the show, Paul E. Dangerously.
Bang, bang, Cactus Jack. And we proved them wrong at Hostile City Showdown. Because Cactus Jack went down to Sabu. And now he comes back for the hardcore rematch of the century. And I gotta be asking myself, what does it take this time to beat Cactus Jack? What does it take this time? How far does Sabu have to go this time? How close does he have to come this time? Because it's not just Cactus Jack this weekend. See, it's a doubleheader for the most homicidal, suicidal, genocidal, death-defying athlete in this or any other sport. Because the day after he has to fight Cactus Jack, he has to take on the only wrestler on the face of this planet who I know deep in my heart is heads up with Sabu. where the odds are even, where it can go either way at any given moment. Chris Benoit, a man trained by the Japanese, a man who has studied every single solitary tape that there is of Sabu, and a man who Sabu himself is obsessed with, because he knows how good Chris Benoit can be. And this Saturday night is Chris Benoit's opportunity to show the world just how great he is, because he wants to go through Sabu. And Sabu will do anything on this planet to stop him. And that's what scares the hell out of me. Because I gotta think to myself, a doubleheader with Cactus Jack and Sabu, it burns in my mind. Sooner or later, he's gonna crash and burn. Sooner or later, he's gonna go too far. Sooner or later, he's gonna miss. Sooner or later might happen this weekend. One way or another, this weekend will be Sabu's finest moment, even if it's his last weekend in wrestling.
Right, coming back in, we're going to be discussing some WWF stuff from this month. We'll start with the TV review. The 12th of September edition of Raw, this was the first one after SummerSlam. Undertaker defeated Quang in his first match back. There's no sign of fake Undertaker. It looks like he's just disappeared. King's Court segment with Doink and Dink, setting up Lawler's match with Duke the Dumpster Drewsy next week. The clowns bring out Lawler, the president, of a trash can. The segment ends with Lawler going to kick the trash can at Dink, but hurting his foot. As it turns out, there were heavy weights inside. Then to the 19th edition of Raw, Tatanka, now suited and booted as part of the Million Dollar Stable, continuing his feud with Lex Luger. Joe Lawler faced Drewsy. The match broke down as Lawler opened the trash can on the outside and Dink was inside. He squirted Lawler with water. Lawler then ran off by those two, plus Doink, who had the entrance ramp covered. Lawler eventually escaped through the crowd. Bob Backlund is back. In an in-ring interview with Vince McMahon, he says he defeated Bret Hart in that title match. Gets over the chicken wing in a largely incomprehensible promo. Dates back to a title match with Hart on the 30th of July edition of WWF Superstars. Backlund then locks in the move on Lou from the WWF magazine. Refuses to let go of the hold, causing McMahon, Savage and a host of referees to storm the ring in a very strong visual segment, which made Backlund look a bit deranged, although I'm not sure whether that's incorrect in real life anyway. Yokozuna won a squash match, and afterwards the light went out Undertaker style, and Yokozuna ran off scared. Seems like the Yokozuna-Undertaker feud that seemingly ended at the Royal Rumble will be reprised. The pair are one of the headline attractions on the Heart Attack Tour of Europe. Then fast forward to the 26th edition of Raw, with the Intercontinental title match between Razor Ramon and Tatanka, which broke down after 15 minutes. Razor was distracted on the outside by DiBiase. Tatanka took the advantage and then Lex Luger came out, was attacked by Bam Bam Bigelow. The segment ended with the four brawling in the R-way. King's Court segment, this time with a British Bulldog, who's interrupted by Jim Neidhart. Neidhart said that Bulldog isn't part of the Hart family, but says that he wants to get into family business, then he should face him next week on Raw. Bulldog said that he was invited by Brett to watch his back at SummerSlam. What a fantastic job he did of that one. And that he accepted his challenge on Raw next week. Bob Backlund came out during a squash match and gave Randy Savage the present of a dictionary so he could better understand his promos. King Kong Bundy is coming back to WWF. That was in the form of a video package. The Head Shrinkers are now sans Samu. He has been replaced by someone called Sione, who is previously known as the Barbarian.
And I put the chicken wing on Bret the Hitman Hart for one reason. Because when I did that, I had the opportunity to put it on each and every one of you people. Plebeians. I'm not one of you anymore. I walk tall. I don't have to cheat. And I hope that each and every one of you felt the pain of the greatest hold in professional wrestling, the chicken wing. You know, when I came back, McMahon, I didn't use the chicken wing because I wanted to make these people happy. Well, these people could drag anybody down. Because they're not successful. They are manipulators and they manipulate themselves. And that chicken wing. This is Bob Backlund. The chicken wing
greatest pulled in professional wrestling, and nobody, including the man with the belt, not the champion, can't get out of it. And I'll return.
Nobody told Backlund the NFL's throwback weekend was over.
Does that bother you?
Stuart, let's talk about Backlund. It's not confirmed yet by any stretch, and you know I'm kind of filling in the gaps, but he's talking about the title enough where I think that's where they're going, because we've not seen Brett or Owen this month. Bob Backlund in the title picture in the era of the new generation, in the era of all of the above. I don't get it.
It's interesting. I guess it just goes to show how weak they are on the heel side of things. Obviously, they've depended on Yokozuna for the last 18 months, maybe, to carry the sort of main event heel side of things. And with him moved out of the title picture, and with Owen's run at the title seemingly finished, where do you go? Do you push Tatanka freshly turned up, or, as you say, his feud with Luger's going to carry on? Would you have turned Luger heel and made them have a run at Brett? Shawn Michaels and Diesel are perhaps the only other options, or a Bam Bam Bigelow? Yeah, it certainly feels out of place, but the match he had with Brett on Superstars was excellent, and the promo where he slapped the chicken wing on Lou Gianfrido, fantastic. He looked like a complete nutcase.
Yeah, well, as I say, I'm not sure that's even incorrect or live. I think he may just be anyway. But no, I mean, you're right. There are a lack of options, and I think we had a very similar discussion about a year ago when we were talking about Luger kind of replacing Hogan, and that there just wasn't really a better option. But I just don't know, like, what does it say about your own work as a, you know, as a kind of a company and as a kind of, you know, trying to develop new talent that in the 12, 13 months we've been doing this project that, okay, now Yokozuna's not on top, and now you've kind of Owen stepped aside. Your best card is Bob Backlund. What does that say?
Not a lot of good things, really. Well, the whole new generation promotional effort has been marred by hypocrisy anyway. You know, the first pay-per-view under that kind of banner was headlined by Lawler and Piper, which was anything but new generation, you know. So pushing Bob Backlund is probably quite consistent with that.
I suppose, I mean, we never got the conclusion to the Lawler and Hart feud. It would have been a long delay to reprise it, but and as much that might have gone against kind of what I'm saying about kind of Backlund being like miscast in terms of you're pushing a new generation, you're going with someone so old. But I think the Lawler Hart match would have made a lot of sense in that role. Even if it had been another old guy in Lawler, it was a match that we never got the conclusion to because Lawler got kind of, well, he wasn't suspended, he just kind of wasn't with the, he was off TV while he had some legal troubles last year around Survivor Series time. I just, that match to me would have made more sense. And what's happened to Diesel? You know, Diesel had a match at King of the Ring. You know, he did the Jackknife Powerbomb to Brett before Neidhart ran out. And he doesn't seem to care about the title. He's just swan around with Shawn Michaels as a tag team champion. And you are right to say that they are shorn of options. But I just feel that when you're shorn of options, you just say, okay, who is our best option? And I don't think Backlund's anywhere near the top of that list, other than the fact that maybe he's a guy that Brett can easily beat compared to, say, Diesel, who Brett probably couldn't beat, and a few other guys who Brett probably couldn't beat. I guess that's the only upside, is that Brett can just run through him at Survivor Series.
I guess they're going to be dependent upon, like you say, Yokozuna and The Undertaker as a star attraction on upcoming house shows and possibly even Survivor Series, so that then whoever Brett faces at Survivor Series, be it Owen again or maybe even Backlund, they're less depending on that to draw for the show.
Yeah, no, it's another show without Brett on top, I suppose. Well, that's if that is the case. But no, it's just as you said, that Backlund segment on Raw with Lou from WWF Magazine was excellent. I mean, the promo Backlund cut immediately beforehand was, well, probably by Backlund promos, it was probably quite good. But by any normal standard, it was, yeah, as you say, just nonsense, really. But basically, he got over the fact he was a heel. He said he didn't want to, you know, we had earlier, he didn't want to you know, come back with using the chicken wing, but you know, the fans kind of made him do it and all that stuff. And again, I'm trying to make sense of his promo. Maybe it's not him, so I should even attempt. But the actual, once that thing happened, I thought the visual of kind of Savage whipping off his headphones and running into the ring, and then all the refs and the WWF officials still in the ring, I thought was excellent. That was one of the best segments WWF Raw had in months.
Yeah, I agree completely. Absolutely. And Savage sort of ripping off his headset and heading towards the ring gave it an air of legitimacy as well.
Yeah, as a kind of like, that wasn't meant to happen, that kind of thing. Just some quick things. Thoughts on Tatanka? Suited, booted? It's a nice change. I mean, I don't like the fact his wrestling gear is seemingly the same. But yeah, I think it's quite a nice change otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. But like you say, it doesn't then fit that he's just wrestling essentially the same gear and essentially the same routine I've picked up. There doesn't seem to have been a great deal changed from his babyface routine. He's just slowed down a lot.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess we'll give him more time on that one. But yeah, I think certainly having ring gear ready that maybe, you know, accepts the fact that he's moved on from his previous character, although maybe he hasn't. But I thought the visual of him in a suit and tie went really well.
Yeah, for someone who's been a babyface since the dot of being in there, of being in the WWF, yeah, it was definitely interesting to see.
And we've got King Kong Bundy's coming back.
Maybe that's who Brett will face.
Ah, that answers it. I won't investigate any further than that. I guess we'll wait and see. Anyway, that will wrap up the WWF TV review for this month and really the show. We'll come to our match last moment of the month, Stuart.
I'll go with Hogan cutting his promo down the phone to some random woman who obviously had no idea what he was going on about.
Yeah. That was quite good. You're certainly right about that. I just think, do I give it to the back? Yeah, no, I'll give it to the Backlund thing. I think I was going to go with Vader against Sting, but in terms of my moment of the month, I think the Backlund segment was really effective. As much as I think it's a bad position for them to put Backlund in terms of, I think there are better guys for it. I thought that segment was really effective. The visual of that they cut to a close-up shot of Savage, who, like, his facial expression turns and he whips the headphones off and charges the ring, and then they cut to a wide-angle view and we just see about four or five WWF officials like simultaneously slide into the ring. That was great. Maybe Backlund is the wrong guy, but if they're going to build him like that for the next 2 months, we might actually end up with a really big match at Survivor Series.
And if it's anything of the quality of the Superstars match, then yeah, it could be very good.
Yeah, certainly. Anyway, that will wrap up this month's show. Stuart Brooks, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome. Always a pleasure.
Stuart, you do the new, we're kind of out of 1994 mode now. You do the New Generation Project podcast. I think you're in, you did Halloween Havoc 95 this week?
Yes, we took a quick diversion to WCW as obviously we mainly deal in WWF stuff. So yeah, we're just about to do Survivor Series 1995. So we're about a year ahead of where you are at the minute.
And where can people find that and just talk us through kind of how that show works and all of that?
Well, most of the time it's pay-per-view reviews. Most of the time it's WWF ones, but occasionally, like I say, we make diversions into WCW. We also, over the summer, did a sort of Raw versus Nitro episode, which was a direct comparison of the second episode of Nitro to the corresponding week's Raw, which is something's quite interesting. We've had quite a lot of positive feedback to that, so we might do a few more episodes along that line. You can find us iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, PileDriverWrestling.net and Botchamania.com. So we're in quite a lot of places there. And as I said at the start of the show, Facebook.com/New Generation Project Podcast and Twitter is @NewGenPodcast.
Excellent. You can find this show at wrestling20years.com for all of your old episodes. We're on iTunes and there's an RSS feed on there if you want to pick that up. At wrestling20yrs on Twitter. And that's about it, really. We will be back next month. We've got Halloween Havoc coming up, Ric Flair's retirement, or, well, in theory, it was a great bit. I'm doing my research for the show today, and I'm kind of just getting things together for the news. and I open up the Torch. I'll read this quote from the Torch. I mean, this actually could have been involved in the show, but this is a paragraph from the Pro Wrestling Torch from the October the 1st edition of their newsletter. At first, there was a collective moan within the wrestling industry as word spread that this could lead to a major screwdrive ending at Halloween Havoc, where neither man really retired. Instead, Monday at CNN Center in Atlanta, Ric Flair was formally asked to retire on October the 23rd by WCW management. While Flair has not spoken on the record about the subject, sources say he agreed reluctantly. Flair has said repeatedly to anyone who will listen that the last several months that when he retires, which he didn't plan to do until at least late 1995, he would never return to the ring. He said he doesn't want to be known as someone who teases retirement or comes out several times only to tarnish his reputation. No, he definitely won't end up being remembered as a guy who several times teases retirement only to tarnish his reputation.
Genius, absolute genius.
That has been the September 1994 edition of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. I am Bob Bamber, and until next time, goodbye.